Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
I'll handle this. The Avatar is back. This is Appa, my flying bicycle.
Right. And this is Katara, my flying sister.
That's right, I'm Sokka. It's pronounced with an Akka.
My name is Tom Beifong, and I'll need 4 tickets.
My name is Zuko, Prince of the Fire Nation, and heir to the throne.
Don't flatter yourself.
You lost me at Zuko.
Zuko, you look so cute.
I can tell you're lying.
Why would I let go of Katara? I love her.
Anybody got a problem with that?
You'll have to leave now. Your lemur is harassing my sparrow keys.
Those are enemy birds.
Even that oaf knows to concentrate on what he's doing.
He does have a heart, doesn't he?
Come on!
Shuffle on, I get you.
Stay flaming. Now, check this out.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFang.net. This is a mini-cast where we discuss smaller topics for a shorter amount of time. I am your main host, Mel, and today I'm joined by Allie. Ooh, and Brittany.
Merry Christmas.
Sam.
Hey, people. What's up?
Delaney.
Greetings.
And Allie again, just because I don't think she was heard last time she spoke.
Hi.
There she is. Okay. So our topic that we're discussing in this particular minicast is Ursa theories leading up to The Search, which is coming out in April, I think, sometime this spring. Basically, theories, where is she? Is she alive? I don't know. She might be. We're going to find out. But before we find out, we're going to share our theories. Also, theories slightly on The Search, I guess, and what happens in The Search. Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, there we go. All right, so first couple things we know about Ursa is that she, it's heavily hinted that she assassinated Azulon. I think we can all agree that that's pretty much what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Okay.
I mean, it's pretty heavily implied. It's either that or she allowed her husband to do it and was just like...
But I thought it was more of her trying to stop him, and then Ozawa's like, get out!
Well, he said she did treacherous things that night, so...
I'm guessing she poisoned him or
I'm
did the whole
she poisoned him
thing.
Or, yeah, if we're gonna get graphic, there's many ways she could have gone about doing it. But I think what we're supposed to get out of that is that she
murdered him.
Yeah.
Also, Oza, though, couldn't we say that... Well, I just like to think that Ursa's a goddess and just amazing, but...
See, that's something we might find out about her, though, in The Search, is that she's not exactly as perfect and lovely as we thought.
I thought you were going to say she's not human. I was like, what?
Oh my god, Allie, do you remember years ago, this fanfic had ended. It was completely normal. It was like... Izuko talking to Ozai, like, where's my mother? And you're like, okay, what's their theory? You get to the end, she's an alien, she gets abducted by aliens.
Oh, I remember that.
And, really sound theory. I couldn't tell if they were kidding or not, because the fic was really well written and so serious. And then at the end, it's like, she was abducted by aliens. And they go into, like, how she was abducted by aliens and when they came. And it was
Troll.
It was the worst. Anyway,
I'm gonna sneeze again.
No, she's definitely human.
Don't sneeze like that again, please.
We also know that she was kind of banished in secret, I guess. I mean, it's kind of interesting. We don't know how the public at large in the Fire Nation reacts to her absence. Like, did they say she died?
She was kind of...
Nobody really knew, I think we're assuming, because Ozai didn't say anything.
Yeah, he wouldn't say, she's banished because she murdered my father. I don't think that's something he would say. Because he was in on it, obviously.
Well, also thinking, I guess, like... Because we saw how it was with Sozin and Roku, like, going on. Maybe they didn't really know anything about the Fire Lady at all.
Yeah, it might have just been, the prince was married, and then he became Fire Lord and wasn't
like, she's
married.
Essentially a concubine, maybe, in the eyes of the public.
Well, also, too, something to point out is that Ozai was the second son. And assuming he's not, like, Prince Harry, he was probably, like, unimportant and not
like,
really...
Oh, whatever.
Not really
he got
looked
married.
At. You know, it's like, oh, the second son got married. How interesting for him. He'll never be king, essentially.
Yeah.
And then when he becomes king, at that point, he's not even, well, Fire Lord, he's not married at that point, so.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. So, yeah, it could just be a thing that was kind of brushed under the rug, not really talked about at all. But, you know, she was, from what Ozai told us, and I guess we can take him as a reliable narrator, because.
I don't know about that.
Well, we have to.
I guess
yeah,
at this point, we have no other choice. So, going off of what he said, She was banished in secret. We don't know where. Zuko seems to think she's still in the Fire Nation, according to some spoilers.
I'm assuming everyone's read this already.
Slight spoilers. There was the first couple pages of the search came out. BuzzFeed, I think, got them sent to them by Nick and released them as sort of promo. And it basically, what happens is Zuko asks the gang to help him on a search. Gang minus Toph, I think. I don't think she's there.
Yeah, which makes me sad.
Me too.
Basically asks them to come to help him search for his mother, and he's bringing Azula along, who's like not bound up and chained or anything, because she helped him get information out of their dad, and he wants to help her find kind of like mental peace, I guess, is essentially what we get out of those pages. But we learn that the first place they're going to look is the town she was born in, the Fire Nation. And it sounds like he seems to think she's there from the way he was talking about it, so we don't know. Maybe she wasn't banished completely from the Fire Nation. Like, maybe she was just living kind of secretly as a peasant.
I don't think she'd even be, like, a peasant. I think Ozai personally would have hidden her.
Or the Boiling Rock.
Really? You think so?
Oh, yeah. I actually think so, because remember, there's that scene in Stukul Alone, and it's, like, on a flashback, and you see, like, Ozai standing underneath a tree, and he looks... It's supposed to be downcast.
Well, you can't see his face.
Well, that's true.
You can't see his face, but, like, the tone of the scene is very
This
somber.
Was before Ozai went cray, and he probably may have tried to hide
I think he was always cray.
For
he
terms
was cray,
of...
but he was different levels of cray. Like, King Henry VIII was cray-cray from the very beginning. He just, like, went downhill.
Actually, not necessarily. I mean, King Henry... Well, that's a different discussion.
But
the point
I'm using,
is,
like,
at that thing. Point, I kind of agree with Brittany, though, in what she's trying to say, that Ozai may have been almost protecting her at that point in his life. Sure, but anyway, point is, we know that she was essentially... She was banished from the capital. She's mm-hmm. not in the capital. She's somewhere... That is not the capital. We know that. We know she's been there... Since she was Zuko was about, I think he was supposed to be 10 or 11 in Zuko Alone.
13.
13? I thought he was younger than 13.
No,
he's 13.
As in the finale, or
he's 13 during the duel.
And he says that he had. Never mind. He might have been 10 or 11.
Wow. Well,
I'm
backed off that really
hey,
fast.
Geez.
Wow.
Anyway,
I'm glad you really, really supported your position. But okay, so yeah, this I think this is the list of essentially everything we know. I mean. Agree, disagree?
Yeah.
I mean, am I missing anything?
He was 13 when he had the duel with Ozai, so I was going off of that, but then I was like, wait a minute, that happens later. Anyways.
All right, so
Ursa was pretty.
Ursa was pretty. She was a nice lady, maybe.
She was nice to her kids. She could be like a Cersei figure.
Except for Azula. She
Don't
made
she was
nice
to Azula. Do not watch Game of Thrones if you are under the age of 18. Anyway.
Oh, why is Game of Thrones coming into this?
Does that mean
I
checked out?
Brittany mentioned Cersei.
Oh, God.
Anyway, okay, so that's what we know about her. So that's all we know for definite about where she is, what happened to her, etc. So, theories. First theory, and I think a lot of things... I don't even know if many people are hoping for this, because people have very differing opinions when it comes to her. So, but basically, first theory is that she's alive, and she will be found by the end of the search. Thoughts on this?
I disagree, just because I have that one theory.
Yeah, we'll get to
that.
You save that.
I disagree with this theory, but I think it's actually going to happen, knowing Jean Yang and, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel, just, like, Jean Yang's going to do this, or... I mean, part of me is like, yes, she'll be alive, and the other part of me wants to cry my eyes out and be like, poor Zuko and Azula, and then I guess I'm a little bit conflicted.
Yeah, I almost feel worse. I think I actually do feel worse for Azula.
I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think Zuko's over it at this point. Azula never really got over it on the subconscious level, I think.
Mommy doesn't love me.
Yeah,
Mommy
I mean...
issues.
The thing is, they're doing a comic on it. I mean, so the natural assumption would be like, oh, we'll find her and she'll be alive. You know, but you never know. But question with this is that if she's alive and if she's found in the search, or if she's alive, period, you know, where is she? Is she in the Fire Nation? Because obviously she's not going to be in the first place they look, because I think this is supposed to be a trilogy as well. And even if it's not a trilogy, she still won't be in the first place they look. I mean,
because that'd be really anticlimactic.
That'd be dumb. So, thoughts. I mean, the obvious option is the Earth Kingdom. I think
Boston would be really awesome.
Yeah.
Wait, about what?
About if she's alive, and whether she's found or not, because there's also, I have a theory, but we'll get to that. But if she's alive, where do you think she is?
That's a good question. Honestly, I'm really not sure. I didn't really have, I mean, I guess Ba Sing Se or, like, something like that would be cool, but I really don't see a reason why she would be there other than to, like, because of the banishment.
I mean, it doesn't have to be the Earth Kingdom. There's, like, this theory that she's in one of the water tribes.
That would be cool, but there's also, again, no reason why they would let her in, also.
Well, she could just show up and be like, I'm gonna hide here, guys.
I'm a refugee.
It would be, like, in secret, though, like, they don't know who she is.
But they still don't like the Fire Nation.
We could also talk about this.
She's Fire Nation.
What about the White Lotus?
Ooh.
Ooh, under protection.
She's definitely a member.
Not even a member, just under their protection.
Right? That'd be awesome.
I don't even think so. Since,
like,
you know,
in plain sight stuff going on right now. That'd be epic.
Yeah.
Genius. And she turns. Oh, I'm so excited.
I mean, that's a possibility, too. Assuming she's alive. So, I mean.
She's alive.
Worst case scenario, Ursa is alive. No.
Worst case scenario.
Someone was saying something. I think it was Brit. No.
It wasn't that important, and somebody else already said it, so I was just kind of. Okay.
So, I mean, obviously, the obvious choice is the Earth Kingdom. I think Ba Sing Se is a little cliche. Like, I think that's the one that shows up in all the fics, is that Ursa's, like, hiding out among the refugees in Ba Sing Se. Although it does make a lot of sense for her to hide there, it seems a little touchy clay.
Touchy clay.
Cliche, and a little anticlimactic. So I think wherever she's hiding, assuming she's alive, is going to be somewhere non-conventional, like possibly with the light white. God, I can't speak words.
Are you okay today?
White Lotus or the one air temple we haven't seen yet, maybe.
Which one?
Maybe she's completely secluded.
We've seen all the air temples.
No, it's the Eastern. Maybe
she could be hanging out with the.
We've seen
the herbalist lady.
We haven't seen the Western. Then we've seen North, South, and East.
No, Western's the one that's underground, right?
I can't tell the difference between my lefts and rights. So
me neither.
We've seen dyslexia. We've seen the north. We've seen the south. We've seen the one in the Fire Nation,
which is the west.
Which is the west? Where's the east? Have we seen the east?
That's where the Guru Man was.
Where the Guru takes place.
Guru. Okay, so we have. Okay, so maybe she's not hiding in one of the air temples.
She could still be there. Guru's like, Kathik's hiding her away and being really creepy and stuff.
That would be kind of weird, though, that Aang was there and never noticed her.
I actually like that a lot better than the Ba Sing Se theories or the Water Tribe theories.
Well, she could be in the Air Temple. So I guess options are Ba Sing Se, the obvious choice.
Fire Nation Colony.
Fire Nation Colony, again, another choice.
That would make a lot of
sense. That's another obvious choice. Unconventional.
Zombies, Mom.
Right now, Water Tribe kind of makes the least sense to me, because they wouldn't even let her in. Regardless of who she was, she's still Fire Nation.
True.
Yeah, and
but
she's
unconventional
still
choices that are still viable is the Northern, not the Southern Water Tribe. Northern Water Tribe.
Well, why not the Southern
Water
Tribe?
Hiding amongst the White Lotus.
Because there's like four people in the Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, exactly. So that would have been better. Like hiding
the Fire Nation invades there all the time, though. That's how our story started.
If there's like 10 people, don't you think you're going to notice, hey, who's this lady? Who's not us? I mean, it's kind of strange. So
my Ursuland theory.
That's an unconventional choice, not really one of the more prominent ones. I think a real possibility is the White Lotus is hiding her away somewhere, or maybe even it's interesting to look at the possibility of her hiding out in an air temple.
Mm.
Who knows? Maybe. I think those are our options at the moment.
I like Ursuland.
Ursuland, yes. She has her own world.
Yeah, there's this magical land that they discover, and it's like, oh god, there's Ursa, and she's been on this whole new undiscovered continent the entire time.
There's also Amashu, but again,
Amashu,
nothing really special about that.
That would,
Kyoshi Island, nothing really special about that.
She's actually in the Cave of Two Lovers, and she was there.
She joined the Hippies.
Whale Tail Island.
Kyoshi Island sounds like a good idea.
Whale Tail
to me.
Island, that could be one, since it was mentioned once for like a second.
Kangaroo
Which
Island.
One?
Whale Tail Island.
Or Kangaroo Island, like Sam just said.
I actually
but
like Whale Tail Island.
I kind of like the, crap, what did you just say?
Air temples.
No, Amashu. I forgot.
Kyoshi Island.
Kyoshi Island, yes. Because it's like the Fire Nation never really invaded them.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, so. One thing I've always been curious about with Ursa, so this is kind of off topic, is did she know that she was descended from the Avatar? Like, is that
probably her grandfather.
But Zuko and Azula didn't know, and I bet you Ozai didn't.
What if she knew?
I'm assuming she knew, but she may not have relayed that information to everyone.
Yeah, that seems like a thing that's not okay to be at that time. The Fire Nation is descended.
How did Iroh know it then?
Trying to keep that secret, because Iroh knows everything.
Okay, so...
Yeah, but that's not valid.
Well, so basically... Ursa would... Sorry.
Okay, we're getting a little off topic. But basically, the other option is, besides where she is and when she's alive, is that she's alive but won't be found in the search. Now, why is this... I mean, the thing is, we know nothing about Ursa. Like, literally nothing. Like, we know, yes, she loved her kids, and we have this image of this nice, loving mother, and all the fanfics have this warm, happy reunion. But the fact of the matter is, like, she probably murdered Zuko and Azula's grandfather. I mean, she's going to be feeling a little bit of a... I mean, obviously she did it to save her son, and I'm not saying what she did was right or wrong, because we're not going to go into the morality of that. But, you know, she probably feels ashamed of it. She probably feels guilty. And she might want to stay hidden from them just because she is that guilty about what happened. Or
and
maybe
Zuko
even,
could punish her, technically, if he felt the
need
to.
I mean,
yeah,
she has no idea what he's become, what he's like. He's Fire Lord now. He could easily sentence her to death if he felt the need.
And the Avatar. She doesn't know anything about him.
What, like, 7-8 years with Ozai and no one else. For all she knows, he's become essentially exactly like Ozai. Also, another thing to point out is that a stipulation for all this from Ozai might have been that she can't. She can't try and make contact with these kids, or he might, he might just kill Zuko anyway. I mean, that's a possibility.
She probably doesn't know he's imprisoned.
Yeah, at this point, I'm thinking she has no idea what's going on in the Fire Nation. She's hearing what the Earth Kingdom or whatever, wherever she's hiding, is hearing.
Or maybe just nothing at all. Like, she's just been in total isolation for this really,
years.
We're,
like, going so deep into this. Watch it just be like, she's a servant in the palace.
That's what I was thinking. She was in the palace the whole time.
I don't think that would be possible.
I don't think that would be possible either. People are nosy. They would notice that. Yeah.
So...
things don't go unnoticed there. It's the royal palace.
Well, yeah, it's obviously she's not. But my point is, like, you know, we're coming up with all these theories, and watch it be, because, you know, who's writing it? Watch it be something stupid. But my point is that she could be avoiding them. Like, they could find out she's alive, and she could find out that they're looking for her, but just avoid them for any one of these reasons.
Yeah,
I mean, she could be a completely different person, and Azula's crazy had to come from somewhere.
That's true. She could have
laid on. You think he
schizophrenia?
Wow, all of you just talked at once, and I did not hear any one of you.
You think it came from Ursa instead of Ozai?
Well, Ozai never went psycho, let me cry on the floor.
Phoenix?
He did have a Gonda complex and declare himself
the king. He never curled up into a little ball on the floor because his mom did not love him. That's an Ursa thing. Because Zuko had the same thing going on, except he didn't go crazy about it. Just saying.
Zuko had Iroh.
My point is here, we don't know anything about Ursa, is the point I'm trying to make. And
well,
that's
we all
one
agree,
thing,
but the whole crazy Azula thing, I don't know.
Well, it's just the point I'm trying to make is that everyone assumes that it's going to be regular Ursa like we've known her, but we know nothing about her or what she's been through. And one thing I'd like to point out, too, that we see in Zuko alone is that when she gets the letter and Iroh's like, oh yeah, we like killed all the armies and we're like taking the city, I'm going to be back by, like, whenever, and Ba Sing Se is going to be ours, and all the Earth Kingdom people are stupid, and blah, blah, blah. She's laughing with her kids, like, right along with her kids. Like, it's the Fire Nation, you have to support your army, but basically, you know, it's she was the same way when she was in the Fire Nation. She's like, yeah, those Earth Kingdom people are so dumb.
It could be an act.
Too. Yeah, again, we know nothing about her. Like, this is
frustrating
thing. I mean,
like any battle you win, so...
We literally see her in, not even in real time, but in comparison to Azula's hallucinations in real time, once.
Well, that's also, Azula could have, she could have these mixed, because, like, it's her projection.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that can alter your map, like...
Well, this is why Zuko alone had to be told from Zuko's point of view and not Azula's, because I think Zuko's a much more reliable narrator than Azula is. But... that's my point, is her personality, what she's doing, what she's thinking now, pretty much dictates where she's hiding, and if she wants to be, even if she even wants to be found. So, yeah. Beyond her being alive, Allie has a theory.
I do.
Which I think is not the way Allie's going to present it, but I think the overall thing she's trying to get across could
be... Just let Allie talk, geez.
And, no, well, I wasn't done introducing her theory.
Okay, keep going.
And basically, this goes into the theories that she's dead. But here's how Allie thinks we should
All right.
Come across it.
Not to be pessimistic, but she is dead. They don't know she's dead. They go looking for her. Someone, I don't know. They like find out where she was. They get to where she was, and like Aang found Yatso's skeleton, they find her skeleton.
Yes.
It's a horrible way to think about it.
And Azula spins slowly into madness.
Yeah, well, not slowly. I mean, she's already immediate. There. I mean, it sounds dark, but I mean, I think it would be kind of a cool parallel between Aang and Zuko, maybe.
Maybe.
It's pretty dark, but I don't know. That's my theory. It's probably
she'd have to be dead for a really long time if you just find her skeleton.
Yeah.
I don't think, actually, in terms of decomposition of body,
it depends on where she.
Brittany, you're the science person. Tell us. Is that possible?
For her to be dead and be a skeleton? Yes.
In that short amount of time?
And for, like, the time where she's alive where they begin searching for her?
No, let's say she's been dead since she left.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can become a skeleton in, like, 3 to 6 months, depending on where you are.
I'm gonna remember totally that when possible. I die.
Here, I'm gonna look it up for you. You want?
It's not like she'd be in a coffin.
It seems like she'd be in the coffin, or she's open to the elements, and the air is not, like, dry. If
so,
she's, like,
essentially,
Fire Nation, she will decompose very quickly.
She won't mummify. Yeah. Essentially, this is really dark. Essentially,
Ali's
she wouldn't
mummify in the Fire Nation.
Ali's theory is more towards aesthetic, and as opposed to how she died. Why she
I really don't think it's gonna happen, but I just thought it would be kinda...
She was quite happy when she came up with it.
Yes.
But basically, the theory is that she's dead, and they find out she's dead. I mean... This could happen a number of ways. She could have been assassinated. She could have gotten sick.
She could have pulled a Padme and just lost the will to live.
Lost the will to live and just died on the spot.
Hold on, what you said?
It's Star Wars.
Oh.
You know nothing of Star Wars? I'm disappointed.
No, don't talk about this to Allie right now.
Okay, I was just going to stop.
Oh, no, you're Allie. It's okay. I'm sorry.
But yeah, so, I mean, I think that might actually be a strong possibility is that she's dead.
I mean, either she's alive or dead. Well, in
between. I don't know how you thought she was alive.
Well, I think that's a strong possibility, but that's not my prevailing theory.
Oh, okay.
And you can have a certain thought and then be like, well, this is possible, too.
Yeah, so that's another theory, too. She's dead by whatever means when they find her.
Well, dead it.
Now, the other theory, I call these kind of in-between theories because they're kind of a mix between the other three, but... My prevailing theory is that she's alive and we'll see her, but she will die by the end of the search.
What do you think that? Would she be like an old lady?
Well, it's it kind of along the lines, again, this might be lost on some people, but in terms of like when Anakin went looking for his mother in the second Star Wars movie, he found her, but she died. Like, okay. Right after he found her, and it was really
But you have that
moment.
Closure, but then at the same time, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Heart.
Yeah, you have that, you have closure, but it's still, it's a you know, it's painful. It's a painful end. And, I mean, I think that's a possibility just because, I mean, we don't really... I mean, in Korra, obviously, Ursa was brought up once in the beginning. But we don't hear about...
Oh, yes,
well, yes, by...
right.
Jinora. And Katara. But she's not... She didn't seem important that much to Mike and Brian because she was left out of the finale.
They made a joke about it.
They made a joke about it, pointing out that, haha, we didn't tell you. And then they didn't even tell you in the promise. And you have to wait, you know, you had to wait like a year and a half after the promise came out because it came out like, what, like 6 months apart each issue, maybe more, to get a comic book based on this. Now, this tells me the fact that they're putting out an entire comic book based on this, that we will probably see her. I mean,
they better. We really need.
There's really
be
no
better.
Point for them to put out a comic book trilogy if we don't find her. However, because of the way they've said that her story is not really that important, I think she might be dead, or she might be
or
dead
dying.
Be dead by the end of the comic books. The comic
and her
book
being
trilogy.
Alive would serve no purpose. Like, there's nothing they can learn from her except that there was just that moment of closure of finally seeing your mother again.
Yeah, like literally all there is to learn from this is Ursa says that she did in fact love Azula. As much as
mommy
Zuko.
Hug time, and then
Zuko gets whatever he's. I don't even know what closure Zuko would get from her. So there's nothing really to be gained from that because all his issues were with Ozai and Iroh, and he got closure on all that. So there's really nothing. This is really more about Azula than it is. About
I think
Zuko.
It's for Zuko too because you know she is simply stated his mother, and she is missing from his life, and she is the person who he arguably loved most.
That's true.
Well,
I mean,
but she's the one who saved him. Like, the thought of her kept
him.
But there's nothing to be solved here like there is with Azula. With Azula, she has this resounding issue that her mother, that she's inferior. She's got this, it's shockingly, she's got this inferiority complex to her brother because she feels that her mother loved him more. And that's what the closure she's looking for and the question she's looking to be answered. Zuko, the only question he really has to be answered is, where is she? At this point, he knows what happened. He can basically guess that Azula was telling the truth. And Ozai is probably telling the truth.
Well, Zuko serves the purpose of allowing Azula to talk to their mother, because without Zuko, Azula would be stuck in the Mental
Which
Ward.
Which is, again, my point is that the search is more about Azula finding what she needs mentally and emotionally than Zuko.
Mel, I was just about to say that.
Okay. Do you want me to edit
but
that
out? But
nobody
would let me talk. I was about to say,
go ahead.
Instead of finding Ursa, they find themselves.
Don, don, don. Yeah, Azula's going on a life-changing field trip with Zuko, finally.
And still Toph is nowhere to be found.
She already went on her life-changing field trip with us.
But it was the worst field trip ever, so she needs a better one.
She does. That'll be the next trilogy after May gets her. There's one about May coming up with her issues.
Toph's field trip with Zuko.
Toph's field trip with Zuko.
May!
So basically, that's my feeling on this, is that the only thing to be had from finding Ursa is Azula getting what she needs to out of it. And that's presented in the first couple pages of the comic book, again, is that, you know, Zuko's bringing Azula along because she needs to be helped by this. And I think we get the feeling that, interestingly enough, even though we hear about Ursa pretty much exclusively from Zuko's point of view and see how she interacted with Zuko more than, like, we see all her scenes with Zuko instead of what scenes would have been had with Azula, and you go through thinking, when's Zuko going to find his mom, that by the end of the series, it becomes, well, when's Azula gonna find her mom? You know what I mean? It's kind of an interesting flip from throughout the series thinking about Zuko and his mother and now realizing, well, what about Azula and her mother?
Yeah, it goes along with, you know, her fall, her,
yeah,
her slow sink into insanity.
Because we didn't really realize until the finale episodes that she had such, that her the root of all her issues was her mother. So that's just my opinion.
Well, with any luck, Jean Yang will take advantage of this and do something great.
Yeah, hopefully
do I think
he'll
it
make
likely?
The best of this situation.
Hopefully.
He has all the ingredients for something great, but he's probably going to make, I don't know,
because of nothing
down
don't like.
We do not like Jean Yang.
How come?
We had a whole podcast on this. Go listen to the Promise podcast if,
well,
if you want to.
Seriously.
You were on it.
All of them.
That's why I don't want to listen to it.
Anyway, a couple other random theories, just because we're running out of time here, is that there's the theory that she's trapped in the spirit world somehow.
Oh,
I mean, Iroh got into the spirit world. It's really not that far-fetched. That maybe
Iroh
helped
her
get
the spirit
happened.
World, and then she just
Why
ended up trapped.
Why can't they have a comic about that?
I don't know. They should, actually.
I think that's more important.
No offense to Mako, but I think that's a little more important than May finding whatever it is she's doing in her... even know what it's called.
I don't know either.
Another theory that kind of goes along with the spirit world is that Ko stole her face. Just because I think people so love Ko so much, they need to see him come back in some capacity.
She's dead. That's how I want her to go. So
that's horrifying. So yeah, those are the two kind of outlying theories as well.
But then Aang does a deal with Ko or something, and then no, that wouldn't happen.
That's another thing too. I mean, what is the point of bringing Aang along this trip? Because obviously we've seen in the upcoming,
they're broskies now.
Well, in the upcoming. I mean, for story aspect, I mean, in the upcoming comic book with May, obviously, I don't think Aang's going to have much of
Aang has better things to do than find his
presence
mommy.
In that. I mean, so there's got to be a reason they're including Aang in this, and maybe it's because he has to help Zuko find his mother in the spirit world. Ever think about that? I mean,
or
it's possibility.
Because Azula's cry, and he's afraid she's going to
Well, my point is, not even from a logistical standpoint in the story, but from Jean Yang's standpoint, from a storyteller's standpoint, what is the point of including Aang in this comic book? Because they've not been afraid to cut Aang out of episodes before. I mean, he wasn't even in Zuko Alone, and this is essentially Zuko Alone part whatever, so why include Aang in this? Well, maybe it's because
So he can have his little tidbits of Zatara
well,
in there
maybe,
and make Aang jealous.
All jokes aside, I'm thinking maybe it's because they do need to find some way eventually into the spirit world because of this situation. Maybe. It's a possibility.
I mean, it's the only reason, that's really like the only actual reason that we can think of.
I mean, what does
Aang
have to do with Ursa at all?
Well, they're related, technically.
Technically.
technically yeah, Ursa speaking, is Aang's granddaughter, didn't you know? Oh,
God. And Korra's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Avatar stuff is so confusing.
God. But yeah, so, I mean, it's just some things to think about. I mean, obviously, I think we've covered them all. Either she's alive and will be found. She's alive and won't be found. She's dead. She'll be alive, but we'll see her die. She's in the spirit world, or Ko stole her face. I don't know what possible theory is beyond that.
I think if this was going to be well written, they'd come up with, like, a dead end, you know what I mean? And just not find her. And
oh my god, I would actually throw the comic book out the window. Like, I'm not even kidding.
I wouldn't be able to handle it. I'd just I'm not a person.
Like, it would be a satisfying dead end. You know, they have closure, but
how is there a satisfying dead end?
Yeah, like they find out as much as they can about her, and they realize that she disappeared on her own terms or something. Like,
oh, it's one of those moments where it's like, well, she went on her own terms, and I can respect her for that.
Then Azula's still crazy.
I love character growth. I don't know.
Yeah, the character growth is important.
Then I'll send it to you.
Ursa can park it on the sidelines next to Zuko and Azula's character growth and bonding as siblings, because that's the real message here.
I mean, come on, it totally is.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, it probably is. I'm thinking Ursa is just a vehicle to get Azula to a better point in her characterization, because I don't think they mean to end her in a bad place, to be quite
honest.
Maybe
they'll bring her back in Korra.
Because honestly, I'm thinking even the people who hate Azula, I think half the fandom is rooting for her at this point.
It's kind of hard, like, not to root for her, even if you...
Well, she got so pathetic. I mean, it's just, like, I feel so bad for you.
I mean, the end with her was terrible.
That scene with, like, her mother in the mirror, and she's, like, throwing it, I was like, oh my god, can I give you a hug?
But that's so interesting. It's so much better than being healthy.
Well, she's never going to be healthy. It's Azula, but my point is, I think they want to end her in a better place at this point than...
I don't think they should.
...than tied up in a chair.
I mean, it's closure for fans, too. What?
I think they should have just left it alone.
We need a buzzer for when people want to talk.
We do.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? And there's also the possibility that Azula will double-cross them all. Because she did spend time with Ozai before. Again, spoilers, she got the information from Ozai for Zuko. That's a little sketchy. But then again, we also know that she kind of lost faith in Ozai by the finale when he... made her Fire Lord and kind of demoted her to, in her mind, Zuko level. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Really bad, though.
I think at this point, I'm more interested in Azula and Zuko's interactions and what happens at the end of their kind of story than where Ursa is.
Me too. Violence.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Woo.
No.
Ursa. Yeah.
I really like that, the White Lotus theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what would she be doing?
What?
Hmm? What would she be doing?
Hiding.
White Lotus.
I don't know.
In the where?
Where does the White Lotus even have, like, a
They've got base? Secret... They have meeting places. We saw it in the desert.
That was not very secret,
though.
It was behind a door, and there was a little room.
They call them a safe house. They've got safe houses. It's like the Underground Railroad.
Fine.
And it fits in with my whole theory that Iroh knows, but he's not going to tell because he promised Ursa.
Oh, that's a nice theory.
And yeah. The whole Zuko discovery thing, like, Zuko has to find happening. These things out by himself.
Yeah, I can definitely see Iroh knowing but not telling for those reasons.
Mm.
Seems like something that would transpire. It's also a big thing, in fanfics in the fandom, that Ursa and Iroh were, like, close.
I mean, he knew that she was... you know, related to the Avatar, and really that it makes sense that Ursa would tell him
everything.
But then at the same time...
Everything! I told him everything! All my secrets!
Oh, God.
It's like that One Republic song.
Oh, my God. I knew you were going to relate it to that.
Darn it, why? I am not... We are not promoting One Republic on this podcast.
No, I don't like One Republic.
Okay. So, yeah, I think we...
be there.
To the sounds of Sam serenading us all, I think we pretty much got all the theories out there at this point.
Yeah.
Watch us be... I'm sure something ridiculous, whether it be something we didn't think of or something... obvious that we just thought that they would never do, but Jean Yang, being the devil that he is, did it anyway.
Wasn't that bad?
He's gonna be a maid in the palace. Oh god.
First of all, Allie, he's a Zootarian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's all we need to tell Allie about him.
Yep.
Oh, he's one of those people.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, essentially, prelude to the search. This is basically, we exhausted our minds and everything we can think of.
Yes, yeah, seriously, my brain actually hurts.
So, all right. So, what are we ending on here?
Oh, goodness.
Bears.
What? Oh, yeah, that's cute.
Well, Ursa means bear.
Ursa Major.
The minor. It's the Dipper and the Big Dipper.
And Ursa Minor. Could be Zuko, could be Azula. I don't know. Who's the little bear cub in the sky? Maybe one of them dies. We know it's not Zuko.
If Azula dies, I'll be very upset.
All right. Shall we end on bear just because that's cute and funny?
Yes.
Bears.
Great. Bears. All right. I like bears. We're ending on bears. Okay. All right. Ready?
God.
It's time for my famous counting, Allie.
I'm going to kill you.
Ready? One.
I don't understand. Why?
Two. Three.
Bears!
Oh, I went first. That was great.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar the Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongbuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Delaney.
Greetings.
Lem.
Hey.
Philip. What was that? And Derek.
Hello.
Okay. This is a minicast where we'll be discussing a brief Avatar Korra topic for, actually change the brief into now, period of time. Today we'll be discussing, for a second time, comparing Harry Potter and Avatar. Because we need more Harry Potter discussion, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yes. We will try to hit on things that we didn't hit on last time, but there might be some overlap, but I doubt you all remember what we discussed anyway.
Nobody listens to this thing, right?
Yeah, really, exactly. Thanks to Delaney for outlining this, and basically I'm going to say, hey, Delaney, what's this thing you have on the outline about? And that's how this is going to go. Okay.
Just like the first one, if you actually listen to that
yeah.
one.
And if the three other people on this have come up with things to talk about, you may mention it randomly or at the end or whenever. Yeah. Okay. Let's start off with... Okay, let's just do Toph and Luna, because it's kind of an interesting combination to pick. And explain why... how they relate, Delaney.
Well, now it's been a while since I thought of this, but we have these two characters that just pop out of nowhere. Well, we kind of get a little bit of Toph, the dream, and we have these little hints, of course, Aang needs to have an earthbending trainer. And then, Order of the Phoenix, this Luna Lovegood just comes out of nowhere. Like, she wasn't even on the roster when they were saying names in the first book. And yes, I'm jumping between Harry Potter and Avatar, and if you get confused, I apologize. I'll try and calm down. And then, these characters just pop out of nowhere, and they're like, hey, I'm awesome, I'm gonna hang out with you guys because I'm cool. And, they become very central to the stories. Because we have, and they're also very unique, but
they become important very quickly.
Yes, because Order of the Phoenix, Luna, she actually kind of takes over the plot for a little while. You're almost like, Harry and Luna might get together, and then of course Tang exists, and
it exists in the fandom.
Yes, I mean,
it's a
same
bit
thing.
Yeah,
people ship Harry and Luna.
I guess first comment on that would be, in the grand scheme of things, Luna's, a fairly minor character in Harry Potter, and then Toph is, constantly there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, Order of the Phoenix, though, we do have these, Harry, goes off, and he's with Luna. And then, as we go through, she becomes part of the group. The Order of the Phoenix, and she becomes part of that core group that comes away from the Order of the Phoenix. I mean, not the Order of the Phoenix, Dumbledore's Army. Yes, that's what I meant, and because they go to the ministry, and then we have her and we don't really see her as much in The Half-Blood Prince, but then we do see in Deathly Hallows. I mean, we have this just core group: Ginny, Luna, Neville, Cho, kind of just this core group of people who are like the annex of the Golden Trio.
It's the group, but not quite.
Yeah, I mean, like, we have this inner circle, and then we have there's just a little bigger circle that they're all about. That made no sense.
No, it made a lot of sense. It yeah.
I mean, we see that with Avatar.
Oh, it's like it's like Teo and Haru and
yeah,
exactly.
Except I would argue that Neville and Luna are like they're a bit more central to Harry Potter than those characters are to Avatar.
Well, they're like the ragtag misfits of the ragtag misfits.
Yeah, like, because both these shows deal... One is a show, one is book series / movie. Like, because, you know, we have this entire group, you know, Land of Misfit Toys going on. And, so, well, I mean, Haru and Teo and them come back for the invasion, and then... But Luna, like, she's actually, like, central to, when they go to the ministry, because she's like, hey, we have Thestrals, let's go.
Well, I do feel like Luna, Neville, and... I don't know if you included Ginny or not, but I feel like those three are very central. Like, in the seventh book, like, you can see that they really took over the role of the heads of, like, the DA, Dumbledore's army and everything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's fact that happened, because when Harry and them left, someone had to take up the reins and, like, protect the younger kids. And if you haven't read the books, which I don't know why you haven't read the books, but you see that in the movie, because we see now, like, because they talk, Dean and, what's his face, Seamus talk about it. In the room of requirement. So, yes, yeah. We have these. So they're not like Toph is definitely more central than Luna is, but they just kind of pop out of nowhere. And also, both Aang and Harry learn valuable lessons from both. Like, Aang learns to be stronger, you know, to be the opposite of his element at times, because as the Avatar, he has to be balanced. And then Harry learns, you know, he's not alone, and he connects with Luna because they both lost someone, and they can both see the Thestrals. So, you're crazy, but you can be crazy with somebody else.
Which is all that matters.
It is. I mean, because the relationship Harry has with Luna is different than any of the other relationships he has with any of the other characters.
Yeah, it's a bond he doesn't share with anyone else.
Yep. I mean, just because it's just that... Because it's the first connection he makes, because... After Cedric died, ooh, spoiler, he's just feeling so overwhelmed, but Luna's there who can understand in a way that no one at that time can. With Dumbledore being off and like, I'm gonna protect you by not talking to you. So, that's Toph and Luna. and they're both weird in their own ways. Like they have very strong character traits. And they just don't care about anybody else. Like, Luna's like, I'm going to wear radishes and believe in horn snacks and all these different things, and you have to deal with it. And then Toph's like, I'm a tomboy, and I will punch you in the face, and you have to deal with it.
Another similarity that I see is that Aang and Toph didn't exactly hit it off at, like, the beginning, with Aang sort of blowing her off the stage and him getting the wrestling champion title or whatever. Same thing with Harry and Luna, because before... the end of Order of the Phoenix, Harry was sort of, you know, he was with everyone else, sort of like teasing. He wasn't like an outright bully or anything, but I mean, it was very uncharacteristic of Harry. Looney Lovegood, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are good points, and that's interesting.
And then I just want to point out that Aang and Harry are both the first ones to accept those characters. Like, Hermione and Ron, Ron is really like, oh, Luna.
Yeah, like, why are you hanging out with the weirdo?
Yeah, and then Aang, except, like, Katara and Toph just hated each other for a while. Especially in a Bitter Work. That was...
Yeah, yeah. Not Bitter Work. The Runaway, probably more. No, the one before that.
The Chase.
Well, yeah. Well,
just all of them, really. I
mean, yeah. They were really going at each other in Bitter Work. Like, that was the point where they were just, like, fighting constantly. No,
I think that was the Chase, because Bitter Work was just...
They do it in Bitter Work, too, but it's both of them.
It's not constantly in Bitter Work, though. It's basically just Toph and Aang.
Yeah. No, you're right, Lum. But it's that's like a running plot line they have for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, moving on. Next one we have is Chakras and Horcruxes. First thing, before even Delaney gets into this, first reaction I have to this is both plot lines that come out of nowhere and are kind of... a little hard to grasp, I guess.
No, come on.
I would call the Horcruxes so well. To understand.
I think the Horcruxes are done well, but it's also the first time they're mentioned is 6 books into the 6 out of 7 book series, you know.
Yeah, but it's hinted at in number two, right?
I don't know if I buy that, but
you can't get it out of number two.
Yeah, it's
you understand it's that it's something so different. In there. And then it's dark magic. I mean, of course you know it's in there after you know what a Horcrux is. I mean, it's like figuring out foreshadowing after you know what's already happened. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's like hindsight's 2020.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, okay, Delaney, what...
Can you give some context on, like, what Horcruxes are for those and chakras? I
mean, they know. Like, if
they... Do they?
People know Harry Potter.
Okay, chakra. Spirit mojo junk. Horcruxes. I never want to die. There are your explanations.
Well, that's great, but Horcruxes are really when you put your soul into an inanimate object, or not inanimate necessarily, but into another object.
Also, chakras involve less murder.
Well, not necessarily, you know.
Yeah, it depends on the person.
I was
there.
Murdering that banana cucumber juice.
That was awful. Okay. Delaney, talk more about these comparisons.
Well, as you said, I mean, they just kind of pop out of nowhere, and they're also, of course, we get into this in the next thing we're going to talk about, but they're unique to both series, and they're something the main character, like, alone has to deal with, because, now you're going to say, Horcruxes, wait, just give me a minute. With chakras, I mean, Aang has to go on this journey to save everyone else, because he has to unlock the Avatar state. To save everyone else. And he has to go on this journey with Guru Pathic and, you know, unlock chakras. Which, I mean, it's just this spiritual... I mean, he's... Because this thing actually happens physically and spiritually, because we actually see him, like, unlocking the chakras. Like, we have this visualization of what's going on. And then, of course, he ultimately fails. And he dies. Spoiler! And then... Horcruxes, it's not... Harry does take Hermione and Ron with him. But essentially, they're all three, like... Yeah, we think of Harry, but I mean, they're just central to the story. But
the thing is, Horcruxes, it wasn't even originally Harry's problem. It was something Dumbledore dealt with first.
However, yeah. We find out it's very, very, very much Harry's problem.
Well, yeah, later, but it starts off as Dumbledore's problem.
Also, something of note is that with the chakras, love actually hindered Aang from completing it, but with Harry, love was really the solution. It was the key.
He needed love for one chakra, and then he didn't for the next one.
No, he needs love, though, as the Avatar, because that's why he finds out the chakras don't... That's why the chakras don't work for him, because he's the Avatar. He must have earthly connections. That's why Avatars are human. So
wait,
actually,
I don't understand. So
love ended up being the key to the Avatar state, because he has to...
Well, was it really, though? Because
why would you want an avatar who doesn't care about anybody?
No, he can have love, but he needs to let go of some earthly attachments that get in the way of him becoming the Avatar. But with Harry, it's the polar opposite. It's because of the people he loves that he's able to do what he does.
Well, if Aang didn't have these friendships, if the Avatar... Let's say the Avatar... like, I think this was discussed either on the video game, like the game on Nickelodeon or in an episode, maybe, is if the Avatar was a spirit up on a mountain, he'd just be a spirit and he wouldn't be among people. He'd be up on a mountain just doing whatever the Avatar wants to do. That's why the Avatar is human, because they can have these emotions, they can connect to people, and because humans, as we see in Avatar, are so connected to the planet that they can bend parts of the planet. And so that's why the Avatar must be human, that connection. And so love is part of the human experience. And that's why the chakras fail, because he... And then Aang gets into the Avatar state, and then he dies. But then we don't mess with the chakras anymore after that. And Aang, as we can see going through the third season, fully accepts his love for Katara.
If I could just say something. I don't think it's that...
Okay.
The lesson of the chakras is about him forgoing all earthly attachments. I think it's about him putting his priorities as the Avatar first.
Well, yes, it fails, though. I mean, that's why... I mean, that's the whole... Yeah. That's why Aang dies.
A few comments on this. They're similar plot devices and similar... They're used in similar ways, but I think a big difference you have to consider is that the chakras are not, like, inherently evil like the Horcruxes. It's so the chakras are more of like a personal journey for Aang, and the Horcrux is more of like, it's like the thing the hero needs to solve. And in that regard, they're the same.
But however... Oh, sorry, continue.
Now you can comment.
Well, I was just going to say that it does become a... It is a puzzle Harry has to solve, but at the same time, he discovers part of himself. He understands why he can speak Parsel tongue, why he can hear Voldemort in his head. It's a journey into finding who he is because, I mean, he's had the scar. He's been a Horcrux since he was a baby. So I do think it is part... It is a journey, and then Harry does learn a lot on this journey because it's not... No, just in general. It is about the Horcruxes, but then it's also about the journey to each Horcrux, like when Ron leaves. You know, that's such a blow, and, you know, Harry and Hermione have to adapt, and they learn from this.
Yeah.
And Ron learns from this, and then...
A comparison I have. I guess I don't think either one is done particularly well. Not that I'm hating on the Deathly Hallows, but, like, you don't... I get that, like, each one's a journey thing, but at the same time... It's not clear, like, or it's either clear or too obvious. Not clear or too obvious sometimes.
Some differences between them. Like, the Horcruxes is a group effort until the last one. Then it's personal. Like, the chakras are all about Aang and his relations to other people, but it's all solved by him. And also, Horcruxes are original, like, constructs by Rowling, whereas chakras have been a concept for a long time.
Well, original in that it's not based directly on something, but they're both pretty much probably coming from the same trope.
Like, yeah, I would like to point out that I'm not saying they're like the same thing. I'm just making, you know, comparisons.
Yeah. And before I forget, I would hesitate to draw any conclusions from the chakras in Avatar because I don't necessarily think any point is trying to be made.
Yeah, just kind of,
and they don't continue with the plot line, so we don't know.
And it really is just kind of, let's have this episode before Aang dies. I understand, really is no... I do understand, of course, I did infer some things, but I do understand that. And there's a lot of things in Avatar, especially involving spirits, that just don't get resolved.
In this one, in terms of more of like what the lesson is, I guess it's resolved in that Aang doesn't need the chakras, like...
Because he's the Avatar.
I think that's kind of, if they're making a point about the chakras, that's the biggest point they make, and they're making is that love in the sense love triumphs because Aang doesn't use the chakras, and he doesn't need to give up love, and instead he can do this in his own way, and also love in that he doesn't have to kill Ozai.
Well, immediately after season 2, it kind of felt like love sucks. And
I agree.
It'll get you killed.
It's interestingly done in the season 2 finale.
However, I touched on it, just draw the point that at the end of both journeys, the hero dies.
Yeah, and then comes back. Right.
Yes, and of course, the way they come back is different. However, it does have to, but they both come back thanks to another. Like, Harry's protected by his mother, and he in turn protects everyone else. But, he's protected by his mother, and then by... Well, though I guess the mother thing's kind of broken because Voldemort has
No. The mother did protect him because when Voldemort took his blood, he took the mother's protection into himself as well as Harry.
Yeah,
so neither can live while the other... Wait,
survives. Yeah.
No.
Yes. Well, he did. That is what happened because that's why Voldemort took the blood, was to break the blood ward. That's why Harry had to stay with his aunt and uncle until he turned 18. That was the big thing with Dumbledore protecting Harry.
Like a magical protection.
Yeah. So, if you don't know what a blood ward is, check out the Harry Potter wiki, and it's not that hard of a concept, I promise.
Okay, I think that's an interesting one. We could revisit that in part 3, if necessary.
Part 3?
Yeah, I said Harry Potter needs to be in 7 parts, because that would be amazing.
Let's move on to lingo. What do you mean by that, Delaney?
In both... what's the word? Not fandoms. Okay, just these both entities. We see there's words and like ideas and phrases particular to both.
Universes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. My mind was just like nope. So we have like Muggle and what Avatar. I mean, Avatar is a general word, but it has a specific meaning in the Avatar world. And we have So Muggle, pure blood,
Bender.
Yeah, Bender, non-Bender.
I think where this one is going is that this is just more of a fantasy show trope or fantasy story trope, And yeah. this definitely shows that these are both like really pure fantasy stories. They have their both own inherent mythology within the world. You compare it to something like the first thing that comes to mind, Delaney, is Shadow and Bone.
Yeah.
A book you all should read, which it's kind of like the mythology is a little bit like Avatar, but it's the same type of things. This own.
And it has magic and stuff in it, and it's amazing.
Sounds like a good recommendation. I'll put it on my list.
Yes, you should.
What was that again?
Audibletrial.com/FTSW.
Going to ask if you should.
Shadow and Bone, and I need to look up the author's name because it's a weird name.
It's a long name, yeah. But you can find it by Googling it. Shadow and Bone, Young Adult, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I think
it's Leigh Bardugo.
Yes.
I don't know how to say it.
But anyway, I think most of the similarities you will see, like we're talking about this, I don't know what the trope is called for chakras and horcruxes, but, it's probably also a fantasy element of a story. And really.
Because it immerses you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do get that feeling. Because when I first started reading Harry Potter when I was like 7 or something, it was like muggle, that word just doesn't sound right. And six books later, it's like, okay, I'm getting into. Same with Bender. I'm like, Bender's a stupid name. What does that even mean? But now, you know, it's like bending this and bending that. And sword bending.
I think how quickly you get into the mythology is, or how receptive you are to it right away is how much you've been in fantasy series before. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, however, Harry Potter is unique in the fact that people who hate fantasy, they love Harry Potter because it's so different. Well, I mean, it's just
the reason I found a lot of people who don't like it, though. It's just like, oh, yeah, it's Harry Potter. It's, you know, it's popular. I don't like it. I just don't like it. Well, it's a deviation.
And, of course, like, people hate Avatar. I'm just making the point that I do know a lot of people who hate fantasy who just love Harry Potter.
Who hates Avatar?
I think part of the reason with why Harry Potter, with all the its fantasy words, is easier for other people to get in is because a lot of the words kind of sound like they're not meant to be completely serious, like the word muggle. Sounds like it's like, oh yeah, it's fantasy, but it's like not taking it serious, as opposed to, say, for example, Lord of the Rings, where you have literally every
language. Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, multiple languages, which is awesome to study, but so complicated.
I wrote a college paper on that. It was fun.
Awesome.
Nice.
But
what do you study, man?
English. That was for my linguistics class.
Oh, nice. Sweet.
That's awesome.
Then at the same time, we have we have more complicated in Avatar and in Harry Potter these like, you know, Latin spells. Like you're not going to think that a kid's going to want to read something that has Latin in it, but you mean you just take it with it.
Yep.
So and then that wasn't the main point I was going to make with lingo is that yes, I mean all fantasy stories do have, you know, very similar. They have words that make it unique because that's what fantasy is all about. This is the entire new world and, you know, get you all into it, but they have words that are very similar and, they're equivalent to each other. Like, muggle and non-bender, wizard and bender, and avatar, and then we have chosen one, which is duh, but...
The only thing there's no real equivalent for is, like, pure blood. Because that concept, I think, is just kind of non-existent for avatar.
Non-bender, in, like, The Legend of Korra. So like, oh, benders, non-benders, equalists, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They don't get into the genetics of it as in Avatar as much as Harry Potter.
Though you could see it in the Firebender, like, that's something that would be in Firebender philosophy. Like, I could see it, like, that's, if anything, it'd be in the Firebender area. But, I mean, there really isn't a...
I can see it in the Water Nation, too, well, the Water Tribes.
And we do see that, you know, the gender inequality.
Yeah.
Except you don't really see that in Harry Potter. You have very strong, independent female characters. And of course there's Korra, but we don't see it in Harry Potter. Like, a point is not made about it.
Yeah, and also, just like for the lingo, there's the language of convenience, like it's saying muggle instead of person who doesn't do magic-y stuff, and, you know, bender instead of person who throws water around. But there's also just the language of, like, the cultural difference, just American writing versus British writing, which isn't a big difference, but it's also like a noticeable difference to a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Finish up.
I'm just about the British versus the English. I'm trying to see what impact that has on the lingo exactly.
It's not so much like Well, there's the language, like the constructed language, and then just the language that's a product of the writing, I suppose. And that's just, like, it's something that's very identifiable with Harry Potter, is, oh, hey, it's all British people. It sounds British. I don't know. That's
interesting, because it's like, a lot of the stuff that's in Harry Potter is a different dialect to us anyway. Snog and stuff like that.
However, Scholastic made the point to publish the Harry Potter books in America in American English.
Oh, yeah. Like the whole thing about Philosopher's Stone to Sorcerer's Stone.
I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but does it become more of the same words in the beginning of this, at the end of the series, in the beginning of the series, they change stuff?
Wait, what do you mean? Repeat that? What? I'm sorry.
Like, they convert the British English to American English in the beginning, but then by the end they don't? I'm not sure.
I mean, I'd have to go back and check, but yeah. I know for a fact that they did that at some point. It most likely was in the beginning.
I think for sometimes they did, instead of when they say mom, they change from mum to mom. Like,
I think
it's kind of offsetting.
Sometimes they shake it up. So far as spelling, like, I have a book series that I like that I have to import from the UK, actually, because we don't get it here in America, and there's stuff you would never expect, like tire spelled with a Y, and curb is spelled K-E-R-B.
Yeah.
Well,
we don't like, see that
stuff, the stuff you don't see in the American Harry Potter books.
But because just Scholastic, because we have two different publishers, Bloomsbury, something like that, publishes in UK, and then Scholastic took up Harry Potter, like, that's why.
Oh,
yeah, Scholastic makes sure that kind of stuff doesn't come over just because people, it doesn't make sense.
It's possible they convert the written language differences, because I took linguistics this last semester, and this is a thing. It's like spelling is completely separate from the sounds, and so like differences in words, like snog versus whatever. Actually, I think of that as its own word, kind of. Actually, I don't know, but
really?
Like, yeah.
I mean, it means the same thing, but yeah, I mean, it's a.
Yeah. I have a different mental image of that, but it's I need a better example.
That.
But yeah, it's so maybe they converted the written language, but not the spoken language. I don't know. Anyway.
I know, because we don't see, like, color with a U. I mean, like, it's...
Yeah, like, that would be American. That would be the written one.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so, but let's move on.
Totally off topic, but...
We're on, like, the fourth
one. Yeah.
this is one that has a lot of topic potential. Sokka and Ron. Do you mean that they occupy the same thing in the group?
No, I can see people getting upset. Now, they do occupy the same part in the group. That is, yes. However, there are also deeper similarities. I mean, because Ron and Sokka aren't both just comic relief, and I mean, there also are some things that aren't similar. But like, so I do have a note to say include strategy. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone. If you are in the UK,
intelligent.
We have Ron, who his challenge that he faces is McGonagall's in, like, on the way to the stone,
the chessboard.
Yes, the chessboard. And we all know Ron is the champion of wizard's chess. Harry Potter trivia: who's the best at wizard's chess? You're gonna say Ron Weasley. Wrong. And we do see throughout the series that Ron, I mean, a lot of people hate on Ron, which is understandable because he can be a jerk.
Yeah.
But he's very
book smart, but he's still smart at stuff like chess.
Yes. I mean, he's intelligent, but he's not Hermione intelligent.
So, or Harry intelligent.
I think this goes along with they're the same trope in that, I guess first comment I have to make is that Philosopher's Stone is very, very tropey, the first book of Harry Potter. Like that challenge to get to the thing, it's like pure fantasy tropes. But, and I think this is true in that Harry, Hermione, Ron occupy certain roles in the group, and that you can compare these roles to Avatar. Harry being Aang, Hermione being Katara, and Sokka being Ron. The biggest, I think, difference is that one of the females occupies the love interest group while one doesn't.
See, I would argue that they both fulfill that role. I was about to bring that up because it's not the same kind, obviously, but it's like the brother-sister versus...
That was discussed in the, I mean, I'm not trying, that we did discuss that in the past, and I would like, and let's continue, but, because I ranted about 20 minutes about friendship. You remember that, Dylan?
No,
I was on that podcast, and I don't remember that.
I don't even remember this, yeah.
I was like, Harry and Hermione have, like, the best friendship ever, and, like, I was, like, moving on for, like, 30 minutes. But, yeah.
Also, if I could point out, Sokka and Ron are both quite insecure. And I don't know if I can really say one's more justifiable than the other. I mean, Ron's basically grown up as, like, the loser child out of seven. And Sokka is the loser kid out of four. So, I mean, it's pretty even.
I mean, he just doesn't have bending. Yes.
He doesn't have bending. Everyone else, like you said, in Sokka's master.
Okay, in the group, I thought you knew of two siblings that did.
Oh, no, there's, yeah.
Secret siblings. I actually think they're really similar characters. Something that randomly comes to mind is Ron being afraid of spiders and Sokka in random season one episode, Aang running the thing up his sleeping bag. And Sokka, yes.
No, that is, it's unacceptable. It's an unacceptable comparison.
I do think they're very similar.
Though I'm pretty sure Sokka's teddy bear didn't turn into a spider.
Or roller skate.
If they had spiders, do they... I'm trying to think the closest thing in
there. They must have really scary spiders.
Spiders. Like, they had the
canyon crawlers.
Yeah, the canyon crawlers are what I would think of.
That's a lot
those
worse
than spiders.
Spiders.
Those are like mosquito bees.
Oh, and Sokka was afraid of the bats, yeah, in 202. The bat wolves, yeah. Wolf bats, yeah.
Oh, the wolf bat falls. That's
in the beginning, we both, Sokka and Ron are both, Ron's throughout, but Sokka in the beginning, you know, he's very sexist, and just has...
Oh, Ron is, yeah.
Ron is very sexist, and then Sokka's constantly, like, in the beginning, he's constantly putting Katara down. It's really bad, like, God, if you hadn't been bending, we wouldn't have hit the stupid iceberg, and then just... And
well, Katara more than makes up for it by smashing the iceberg and saving the world, so...
Yes.
I don't know, that boat was pretty important.
Yeah, that was pretty violent.
Did you see the bridge series, The Canoe from Walmart?
No.
Okay, we need to go to the next one.
Sorry.
If it's in a bridge series, it's probably not appropriate to plug on this podcast.
We're going to move to Lightning.
Wait, hold on.
No, we're
moving. No,
no.
Lightning, okay, let's talk about lethality.
We actually have another point.
We're moving on.
Dylan is being dictator.
We're 30 minutes in and we're only halfway through the outline. Come on.
Sorry. And disguises is really cool when you get there. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Delaney.
Okay. Lethality, Lightning, and Avada Kedavra. Because I name my outlines like they're documentaries. Anyway.
That'd be the worst documentary.
Shut up.
Okay.
Okay. So we have these forms of, like, these are sure ways to die in both series. And of course, there's lightning in the real world. Real world, yes, I understand this. But, like, we don't see a lot of death in Avatar. We see loads of death in Harry Potter. But now in Avatar, we do see Jet die, but he doesn't die from lightning, but he still dies. But Aang, the main character, dies from lightning, and we just know that lightning is extraordinarily dangerous. We know this from, I know definitely season 2 with Zuko, and might be earlier. Feel free to comment on when this came in, but
also lightning. Just personal experience everyone has, like, don't go swimming when lightning's out and stuff. It's something you learn from a young age.
We see lightning in the storm when Iroh redirects it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So yes, lightning. Don't lightning bad.
And Aang's flashback as well, I believe he was like dodging lightning, not bending lightning.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Glad lightning.
That's an interesting one, yeah.
Wait,
and of course,
I
mean, this, what?
Just in the flashbacks in the storm, where it's like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Of course, we know, you know, you see things, these things coming out of the sky you want to avoid, but yeah, you just know lightning is bad. And then, Harry Potter, we know from chapter... One, I mean, Harry's parents were killed by this dark wizard, the Avada Kedavra curse. I mean, the killing curse. And then Goblet of Fire, they really... What? What'd you say?
I said straight up.
Okay, yes. And then...
I was agreeing with you.
Goblet of Fire, we see... I mean, it's performed in the classroom. I mean, everyone knows the killing curse. And then that's why Harry Potter's famous. Because he's the only person to ever survive the killing curse. And not only does he do it once, he does it twice.
So, something else that's interesting about that is that both of those are, they are pretty much the entire plot sort of, okay, that's stupid. Okay, another interesting thing about that is that they are both seen, but only mentioned very later, quite a bit later in the books. Like, only in the fourth book do we actually know what this is, that Avada Kedavra, and, like, we know it's an instant kill. Well, same thing with Avatar The Last Airbender. in season two, it's like, oh wow, she can bend lightning and stuff like that. But we do see Iroh. We do see Iroh in 112, was it?
112, yeah.
112, yeah, bending lightning and everything. So we see it, but we don't really know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, they're plot points that, like, they're woven in, but then we don't actually find out. And then, of course, the big point, the main heroes survive both of them. We have Aang, who Aang dies, but he comes back. Same thing, okay? And then we have Harry, who survives the first attack and actually kills Voldemort. Well, he doesn't kill Voldemort, but...
Well, he dies in the second one.
What?
Kind of.
No, but Harry doesn't die.
The second one is even.
No, the second one kills the Voldemort, and then but Harry has a choice for the first time ever to either go on or but he's not actually dead. He's more in limbo, which is different from being dead because Aang was dead.
In terms of the fantasy trope, these are all the exact same thing. And yeah. This I've commented on this I think like 5 times before, but whether Harry technically dies or not, he dies. So it's like their exact same thing happens. Lightning and Avacadabra occupy the same thing within this trope, yeah.
I don't think Harry really dies at any point. The only part of him that died was Voldemort.
Well, yes, but that's not the whole point
it's a fantasy trope, like the hero dies, yeah,
Lightning
comes back
and Avacadabra are the same thing. Like, we have these themes of lethality. Like, there is one thing that in both series that is a for sure way to get you killed. Lightning, yeah. Avada Kedavra. Like, there is no way back from lightning unless you're Aang, or from Avada Kedavra unless you're Harry Potter.
It's interesting how lightning evolves in Avatar, because I'm not sure it was meant to be that way in the beginning.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yeah.
Well, Zuko survives lightning.
Does he? Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, when he gets
in the finale.
Yeah, but...
You know,
Katara equals Harry's mom, Zuko equals Harry.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Unshippable. Congratulations, Dylan. You won the war. We can all go home.
Okay, we're moving on. Disguises.
Oh, this is my favorite. Okay. And I think you guys are going to like it once I explain it. In Avatar, Avatar and Harry Potter are both pretty, lighthearted at times. And both groups tend to like disguises. I mean, like, all the time. Like, it's not entirely a disguise, but you could just call it one. Harry, Ron, and Hermione in the invisibility cloak. I mean, they're always under that cloak. And they're, like, 17 under that cloak. And they're like, oh my god, my feet are showing. And there's floating feet.
That's all they ever talk about. My feet. What if they see my feet?
All the time.
Every day.
We have Polyjuice Potion, which turns you into somebody else. We see this in Chamber of Secrets when they're trying to get all up in the Slytherin Common Room. We see it, like, really from Chamber of Secrets on, I can't even really think of points where Polyjuice Potion's not there. Except maybe the third one. Because at Goblet of Fire, what's-his-face, Barnabas Crouch Jr. is popping the Polyjuice Potion.
Oh, yeah.
Order of the Phoenix, I'm pretty sure there's Polyjuice Potion in that. Half-Blood Prince, I mean, there's just Polyjuice Potion throughout, and we understand
whatever.
Because Malfoy tries to grab some.
Oh, you're right, and Crabbe and Goyle were both women, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's
and Deathly Hallows, like, they were, I mean, they had, like, they could have been selling it. I mean, they had so much Polyjuice Potion in Deathly Hallows, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and two, it took them, like, a year to make it, and then all of a sudden just popping it every chance
they
can
get.
Yeah,
they're like, let's go. And then Avatar, we have one of my favorite episodes, Omashu, and they're like, Mr. Papanakala.
Yeah, that's like the first disguise thing. And then we have season 3, them in disguises. We have Katara in 303.
We have the deserter, too, when Aang did that hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we also have them in the, when they first arrive at Ba Sing Se and they go to the party where Aang and Sokka.
Oh, yeah, they get, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Bus Boys.
Freaking freaks me out.
Katara and Toph get new names and stuff, yeah.
The Painted Lady.
Painted Lady, yeah.
And then the Blue Spirit.
Mm. Wang Fire.
Blue Spirit. This is true.
Let's not forget
the disguise.
But yeah,
Wang Fire.
I'm pretty sure this is like probably a fantasy trope too. I mean, or just general plot trope. People are like, let's dress up and do this. But I thought it was, I mean, in both series, it becomes very crucial to certain, like, aspects. Like, we need to do this, otherwise we can't.
Don't forget Aang's disguise with Abba's shedding fur.
Oh, that was
going into Omashu.
Yeah.
Oh, don't forget Toph's hairy pits. Don't forget that.
What?
Oh. It's not, it doesn't really count.
I was talking about going into a mosh.
I brought that up. That was my first example. Where were you, Philip?
Where were you, Matt?
Okay, but yes.
My time goes different than your time.
I'm trying to look up this on TV tropes. But yeah, this is definitely probably a trope. I know there's Master of Disguise trope, but that's not.
That was a good movie.
I liked Turtle. Oh, never mind. I'm sorry.
Turtle.
Just couldn't help it. I love that movie.
No.
And I'm so glad you guys have seen it, because everyone's like, I've never seen that movie. And I just
yeah, it's surprising how few people have seen
that. That was my favorite movie when I was like 6.
Me too. So like, me and my brother walk around and be like, Turtle? And my parents hated us.
I watched it again like a year or two ago, and I was like, wow, this is really stupid.
Wait, is this just really bad movie?
It's pretty bad. It's, I forgot his name.
Does he do a Shrek impression? Because if so, I hate it.
Is he? No. No, this is before. It's probably before Shrek.
Yeah, when you're like 12, you love this movie because it's like, he walks around, he's like, Turtle, and he bites somebody's nose, and it's just amazing.
It's clear to get into the Turtle Club, you have to be a turtle.
Okay, let's move on to getting the girl.
We need to do a Master of Disguise the Avatar crossover podcast.
Yeah, there's so many similarities. Okay, getting the girl. What do we have to say about this?
Well, I mean, they go on this epic journey. Like, it takes forever for Aang and Katara to get together, to the point where everyone in the fandom is suffering. Unless you're Katara and then Bob, but...
Katang is way more important, way more central to Avatar The Last Airbender than Hini will ever be, unfortunately.
Well, the difference is that it's interesting in Harry Potter because the love interest isn't in the main group.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes later. Like, we don't actually see it until much later.
Really, everyone who's like upset that Ginny and Harry get together at the end, they're reacting to the subversion of the fantasy trope. In that, it's expected to be Hermione. To that extent, I understand like Harry and Hermione shipping, but at the same time, that's the worst thing ever. And
because they're just the bestest friends ever.
No, I love it. I try not to love it, but I just can't help myself.
No, you cannot love it.
No, I can't. After that dance in the movie,
Yeah, I hated that dance. That wasn't in the book.
Okay. I was dying in that theater. I'm like, what is happening? They changed it?
That was my least favorite part.
Well, you have no soul, do you?
I
and Hermione are just, they're like brother and sister. Moving on.
Anyway.
Because I will rant for another 30 minutes.
Yeah, let's keep going. Deathly Hallows, the extended camping trip and
short.
Avatar travelogue.
Well, I mean, you get it in the last one, so yes.
No.
Okay, so Deathly Hallows, which is often been called Harry Potter and the Extended Camping Trip, because honest to God, the first three quarters of the book, all they're doing is camping. They're like, oh, we're in Dean's Forest. Oh, the Forest of Dean, excuse me. We're in some place on cliffs, and like they're just everywhere.
When I was reading it, I just threw the book down in rage. Like, I couldn't take it anymore. I thought he was going back to Hogwarts.
That's why Ron left. This is why. And then, like, they're just everywhere, and they're like, oh my god, the lake, and the sword, and then they're just everywhere.
And the thing is, it doesn't do anything. It does stuff, but it's...
You're so right. It's, like, just three quarters of the book, and they achieve nothing until Ron comes back.
The biggest travesty is that we're missing crucial Harry Ginny time.
Yes.
No, we had him staring at that dog.
I know, that was the best part of that book, honestly.
Yeah, he's watching the map.
That's all the Hini I need, just that dot on that piece of paper.
And but then,
let's make the Avatar comparison, yeah.
Nah.
So let's just leave.
I'm psychic, okay. What? So, Avatar Travelogue. This one's pretty obvious. Pretty much every other in the beginning, every episode, they were somewhere different. They're like, oh, we're in the South Pole, now we're at the Southern Air Temple, now we're someplace else, forest, town. But they just jump from town to town. And then, now we do have a few episodes where they actually stay in one place, like when they're in Ba Sing Se, they move around a lot in the Fire Nation, and I mean they just. But for the most part, I mean it's been discussed before on this podcast series. You know, it's a travelogue. They travel everywhere, and I'm just making. I mean, because you can't make the comparison with the entire Harry Potter series because they're at Hogwarts the entire time, but there's so much moving around in Deathly Hallows. It should be noted because they're everywhere. It's like every other day, and then sometimes they go, like, you know, they're in one place for, like, 5 minutes, and they're like, oh my god, Snatchers, and they move. And so it's really that simple of a comparison. They go Yep. Both travel. There's a lot of traveling going on, and they have special modes of travel.
Yeah.
Pairing them. They're not just. And this is just in general. Also, like thestrals and brooms, and they can apparate.
I thought you were going to compare apparating to flying bison.
It is. I am comparing apparating to flying by bison. It's being done, Dylan.
Okay. I'm fine with it. Don't worry.
I mean, honestly, what's the point of having a flying bison if you don't use it?
Indeed, it's a noble species.
I don't understand the point you're making.
It's Aang's big pet, yes.
It's Aang's big pet.
There we go. Regards to them traveling all the time in Avatar.
I'm trying to think if it would make sense to have a form of apparition in Avatar.
Yeah, airbending. You know, they can condense the air to the degree that they apparate.
I was thinking, well,
that doesn't work at all.
Well, I thought if I said it all smart, like it would work out.
Got earthbending, they go under the earth and travel.
Do you know how, yes, do you know how claustrophobic you would be?
Yes.
After like hours
that's
of doing
Bunny
that.
Method.
This is in Arkansas.
Okay, sibling dynamic.
Well, there are siblings galore in Harry Potter. So many siblings. The whole Weasley
they're
family.
They're all related.
Yes,
they actually are all really.
Yeah, everyone ends up late.
It's quite incestuous.
Except for Luna and Neville, which depresses me to no end. But
Neville. Oh, okay.
Luna and Neville don't get married.
Yeah, that kind of made me a little angry.
Abbott is dead.
Hannah Abbott is such an important character, though.
And so is Rolf Scamander.
That one line she had.
No, Hannah Abbott's at least like
she's first alphabetically, like she's so important. Okay, continue.
She's at least in a class with him. Anyway, okay, I'm getting off topic. But
Hannah Abbott.
You almost made me lose my focus.
That's what I remembered her for. She was first in the list of the Sorting Hat.
And no, I remembered her for that mythology. One line she had about her aunt who died.
I don't remember her line.
Susan Bones.
Oh, Susan, okay.
Yes.
Adam Hopkirk. Wait, what am I saying right now? I don't know.
I got what you're... Yeah, she was in the ministry, like, did the trials with Frog Face. Yeah, I got you.
Okay, whatever. Let's get to the Avatar part.
Okay, sibling dynamic. Okay, we have Sokka and Katara. I mean, they're with us constantly. And they're, it's kind of similar to Ginny... Like, their relationship's similar to how Ginny and Ron act around
in
each
six,
other.
Totally.
I agree with that, yeah.
What?
There's in much less protesting from Sokka than Ron, though.
Hmm?
There's much less protesting from Sokka than there is from Ron.
I think that it's interesting. Now that I think about it, Ginny and Katara are actually really comparable characters.
They are.
Because they're both bad. Oh, I can't curse.
They're both the love interest. They're both like feisty. They're both very good fighters. But it's not...
Katara not so much. She's not feisty at all.
No, Katara gets feisty.
I will hate the internet. Katara's amazing.
If you can find me one instance where she's feisty, then I will eat my words. Still.
There was that one time when she interrogated those two guys to find out where to get a...
Oh, that wasn't feisty. Training. That was just being smart aleck.
I mean,
oh, come on. That was feisty.
The desert.
Then you're going to get hate mail for saying Katara's not feisty.
I
didn't realize that.
Katara is feisty. Yep. I mean, obviously Ginny more so, but yeah.
I was going to say... Ginny... Like Katara, mocks her brother for like not having any romantic relationships. Maybe I should add to that. Katara, Katara and like Sokka was just like, oh, when Sokka was like chatting up Yue and Ginny, most notably when she's like mocking Ron in the sixth book.
Lavender.
Yeah, mocking Ron about Lavender and saying like, oh, you. Maybe you wouldn't be so uptight if you just, like, stop swooning over Fleur and stuff like that.
That's another comparison between Sokka and Ron, is that they're always, like, chasing girls.
And, yeah.
Like, and the main character doesn't do that.
I think
Aang's just after Katara.
I think if you were to merge Ginny and Hermione, you'd end up with the stereotypical third member of the group. But I think Avatar and Harry Potter both deviate slightly. In that Hermione's not the love interest, and that Katara's not a Brainiac. Because
yes.
I think of another book series, Plug, The Magicians, which is 18 plus, but you all should, not you mini hosts, because you're not 18 plus, but some of you. But listeners who are should read at audibletrial.com/FTSW. But the love interest.
Two plugs.
That's fast.
Two plugs. The love interest is more Brainiac character there. And I think that's maybe more the stereotypical trope.
This whole podcast should be a plug for Harry Potter and Audible.
That's true, actually. except you can't.
There's a Harry Potter reference in every podcast. Also, like, I mean, we're constantly plugging Harry Potter.
You can't get the Harry Potter audiobooks at Audible though, because
you can only get them on Pottermore.
Pottermore, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, let's do brainwashing.
All right, fun stuff.
Nice. Can I talk first this time?
No.
Cool. That's keep going, guys.
Okay.
Liv, you can say what you want to say.
Fantastic. Okay. You said mention Longbottoms and Jen this one, but seeing as the Longbottoms were tortured to insanity, I don't think it works as well as it might have. I think it works better for like Obliviate and Memory Charms and Guildery Lockhart.
That's what I'm talking. I mean, I'm gonna link all that in, Liv. You gotta give me a chance, man. You can't just chop down my throat without... This is why we didn't want you to talk, okay?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
You're cutting out.
No, continue, Delaney.
Okay. That was weird. So, yes, brainwashing. It's not entirely brainwashing, but we have these similar things. Now, we do actually have actual brainwashing in both. We have Jet, who is obviously brainwashed in... I don't know what episode. There's multiple episodes, but it's an Avatar, in case you didn't know. Jet, he's been brainwashed by Longfang and under in the... What is the base under the... Lake Lao guy. That's
Lake Lao guy.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
So we have brainwashing. I mean, just this indoctrination and just, you know, crazy. And then we have the similarity with the Imperius Curse in Harry Potter, where you control somebody. I mean, that's what Longfang's doing to Jet. He controls, he lures the Avatar and all this. And then Imperius, you can make them do whatever you want. You can make a spider dance. You can make someone like, why can't I think of his name? Stan. That's his name. Stan Shunpike.
Stan Shunpike, yeah.
Yes, you can make him go after Harry, who he really liked. I mean, you just, these forms of control. So I guess that's really what I should have been. I should have said is mind control. And then, I mean, just these forms of... We have these ways of messing with characters' minds, which... I mean, you don't really see a lot in things relating to children. I mean, it's just not usually done. I mean, and the big example we see is with a Jet. But we do see it to an extent in Azula, with the way Ozai has raised her, and the difference in Azula and Zuko.
I do feel that brainwashing is sort of a cliche among children's programs. You know, someone brainwashes a major character, and the other friends have to try and see good and fight for control and everything. And they all go off into the sunset, and they live happily ever after.
Yeah,
that kind
I think
of thing.
It's a way of having like a betrayal or a character be evil without have them actually be evil.
So you can just cop out of it as soon as you want.
Well. All right. I mean, I feel like there are other tropes that are like similar, but it's not exactly brainwashing.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I mean, I can think of examples like Kim Possible and the Moodulator. Like, I can think of examples, but I mean, it's just different. It's not exactly brainwashing. And then back to the mind control and just like affecting the mind, we have the Longbottoms, whose minds are obliviated, and clearly it wasn't done well, and this was on purpose, I'm sure. And maybe they actually did obliviate their minds very well, to the point where they couldn't, and they can't function. The Longbottoms, as we see in St. Mungo's in Order of the Phoenix, they don't know who their son is, they don't know anything that's happened, that's why Neville lives with his grandmother. And it's really tragic and terrible and just... Because I feel like what we see in Avatar, like Jet, like what happened to Jet was truly, like, it's one of the truly just heartbreaking things we see in Avatar.
Yeah.
We see this likable character. Well, I hated him at first, but that's just because I'm such a Katanger. But this character, I mean, he's young, and I mean, he did some bad things, but he had the right, like, he had the right motivation. He just didn't go about it the right way. And this this tragedy in Lake Lao Guy, I mean, like, things he did that just weren't his fault, and then he dies. And then Longbottoms, they were just protecting, they were just big members of the Order of the Phoenix and defeating the Death Eaters, and they don't die, but they're essentially dead. funny. The closest thing you could say is, like, no, I'm not even going to bring that up. And then, any thoughts? I've been talking for a long time.
Well, I think you said pretty much everything.
Yeah, it's good. Let's. I'm trying to get this done quickly. Let's go to sports.
Yay, sports. So this one's pretty obvious and cake. We have Quidditch. Why is Quidditch space? I don't know how that happened.
Quidditch.
Yeah, Quidditch.
Can I just say I love that you have Hide and Explode on here. Like, that's the best sport ever.
That I have what?
Hide and Explode.
I love that. That was just great.
Although, isn't that one that I can't remember what it's called, but they play it like in episode 3 when they go to the Southern Air Temple?
That's Airball, isn't it?
Yeah, Airball. Yeah, that seems a lot more like Quidditch.
Airball is definitely the more analogous comparison.
I mean, yeah, because, well, Quidditch, of course, it's not exactly the same, but you know, airbenders do have the capability to fly. They have gliders, and they can, like, hover for a short amount of time.
And so, not necessarily. Of course, you have pro bending, which is also
Which is analogous with the dueling club we see in Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, good call.
That's a good one.
And just wizard dueling in general. Because
I think
wizards duel
pro bending to Korra is Quidditch to Harry Potter. That's what I would say.
Oh, yeah, like the popularity
wise, yeah.
Yeah. So I should just add, I think we were talking like there are actually rules to Hide and Explode, but I think that's kind of funny, and there aren't, so just to clear that up.
Well, you hide, then you explode.
Yes.
Then you win.
And then we have another exploding game in Harry Potter, Exploding Snap, which Fred and George play all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's all everybody does is play Exploding Snap, and apparently
there's
cards. Do
you know what that is, or, you know?
No, I mean, like, there's cards, and, like it's... I have, like, a general idea. Like, I mean, they do describe it kind of, sort of, in the books. Like you, it's something with cards and, like, moving them in a certain way and, like, stuff. Oh, like,
there's fire.
Yeah, I mean, there's something like that. So, yeah, Quidditch Airball. Got it. That's really simple. And there's a ball. Well, granted, that is, Quidditch is a bit more complicated than we would think Airball. We don't actually know the rules to Airball.
It's a good thing about the complication, because... half of these aren't really here to actually be a major thing. They're just here to expand the universe, to make you feel like this is a real place.
Yeah.
However, I mean, that's the big draw. I mean, the big comparison between Quidditch and pro bending is that we know everything about Quidditch. We know we know everything. We know all the rules to pro bending. I mean, you can read about, Quidditch through the ages, and you know everything you could possibly want to know about Quidditch.
Yeah, and also having, like, a major sport is another fantasy trope.
Yeah.
One that comes into my mind, Final Fantasy X. I forget what it's called, but there's a...
All right.
Oh, gosh.
If you like Terry Goodkind... Oh, sorry.
Check out.
There's a fake sport in Final Fantasy X. I don't remember.
If you like Terry Goodkind, they play Jyla, which is a... it's Jala, something like that, and it's... yeah. It involves a ball and just beating the crap out of each other, so...
And then last things you have are Pie Show and Wizard Chess.
Yes, so they're really very... I mean, they're board games, but there's a lot of strategy. Like, Iroh is the king of Pie Show, apparently. And we have the whole thing with... I mean, and also, these games have... they take on a certain significance. We have Pie Show, the White Lotus piece, and the White Lotus Society. And then we have Wizard's Chess, which becomes important in, as we discussed, Sorcerer's Stone, where... because it's not just, they play Wizard's Chess, but then it becomes important when Ron has to play Wizard's Chess on giant pieces of...
And let us not forget the snitch and the I open at the close at the end there.
But we don't really have an example of that with Korra or Avatar.
Well, pro-bending becomes important when Amon invades the arena.
This is true.
For halfway through the season.
But I'm the one who's trying to make comparisons, and I actually don't see I don't see them as equivalent. Like, Quidditch and pro-bending are the same, but, like, the Amon, like, I mean, I can see that as the invasion. Oh, that the Dementors. The Dementors coming under the Quidditch
pitch.
That's
true, yeah.
Oh, then,
that, to me, is more analogous than open at the close. Like, that's different.
Well,
I
was just saying in terms of being significant to the plot.
I think that's more Dementors.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also the Death Eaters at the Quidditch World Cup. That's not during the game, but...
oh, yeah, that's
like
after,
right
after
it. Which, actually, Amon was right after the game, too.
Yes, because they have the final match.
They destroy something that isn't really very important. It's just a sign of how... capitalized?
It's a sign of the... sign of things to come, I think would be the best way to put it.
It's the end of the old and in with the new horrors.
Yeah, that's actually, I think this would be the best comparison.
Yeah, possibly. And like Goblet of Fire, I mean, that's where the books start to get darker, and this is when Lord Voldemort returns, and then...
Oh, yes, you're right, with Triwizard Tournament and everything, and Voldemort's return.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Also...
Well, last thought.
Oh, crap. I just had it. You made me forget it. It's important, too. Like, there was a really, really awesome point, and this is terrible.
No, remember it.
It would have changed Avatar as you know it.
Well, you can cut in as I give our outro. Anyway, I'm trying to stop this from being an hour long, which I'm right about to hit.
Please, can we just let this happen?
No.
You have 30 seconds. It's not going to happen.
Anyway, I've been your main host, Dylan. Mini hosts have been... Derek, Philip, Delaney,
Lem,
and Philip is had to leave early. No, I thought I said you instead of Philip, but anyway, Jake Owens and I edit podcasts and such. Anyway, thank you for listening, and let's end on.
Oh, gee, I don't remember know. That we should thing, think about darn it. Let's think about it for a second.
Expelliarmus.
Yeah, I'll just end on random Harry Potter word. Okay.
No, different spells.
Okay.
I remembered my thing.
Okay, what's your thing?
Okay, now this is a trope, and you're really going to be like, this is lame, Delaney. Why the crap do we have to wait for this? But both main characters are extremely crucial to the sport. Like, Cora's amazing. She sucks at first, but she becomes amazing. And then Harry Potter's the Seeker. I mean, he's extraordinarily important to Quidditch, and he's awesome. And then Cora is the one we come down to the showdown.
So. I agree. This is another important part of that that fan trope, which...
Yeah, I mean, really it's. I mean, I know it's a trope, but I'm just glad I remembered that. That was killing me.
Good job. Okay, anyway.
Are we at an hour? Are we at an hour yet?
Yes, we're at an hour.
Okay, I'm sorry, Dylan. I wasn't trying to make it an hour. I just really wanted
thank
to
remember. Thank you, Delaney.
I hope to pair this with a short one now. Anyway, let's end on a random spell. One, I don't know which one. Like, think of...
Expecto
think
Patronum,
one,
duh.
One, two, one. Yes. No, everyone says something different. Gosh. One, Avada Kedavra. Two, okay. Three.
Expecto Patronum.
Momentum.